Throughout the afternoon, we're talking to physicians from Northwestern Medicine, talking about COVID-19 and your health. And we have Dr. Ali Shabani with us, who is a chief of neurointerventional radiology at Northwestern Medicine. And we're going to talk about strokes and neurological issues here. And I think one of the things, doctor, that the COVID-19 is surprisingly bringing to the forefront here is this clotting issue and the ability of this particular virus to create a lot of damage, whether it's in the brain or other organs, through clotting.
That's correct. I mean, one of the things that have been noticed now with sort of pathological analysis of organs is that it seems to cause a lot of small clots in the small vessels inside various organs, which can affect certainly the heart, liver, kidneys, and theoretically also the brain.
And do we have any idea what's behind that?
Actually, the disease seems to cause what's called a cytokine storm, similar to some other less non-infectious rheumatologic diseases. And it's basically, in some folks, it's a very exaggerated immune response with a lot of immune chemicals that are excreted in trying to fight the disease that causes this generalized reaction. So not everyone has that same finding, and you know there are differences in immune reactions between different people, but that seems to be a mechanism.
And that's one of the ways that we're treating this differently than we were at the beginning of the pandemic, right? Trying to keep that storm from occurring, or trying to keep that storm from being as intense.
That's correct. And there is treatment with various agents that can act against some of those cytokines that the body's secreting that are causing these effects. So some of those are in trial right now in the Chicagoland area as well. And certainly there's an emphasis on the use of anticoagulation while the patient is in the hospital in order to prevent some of these clotting from happening.
Yeah, I think that's one of the scariest things. The one of the people that I know who passed away from this actually passed away early in the pandemic, originally thought to have been, it was an unexplained death. She was relatively young and died of a massive, of a clotting in the brain. And then eventually it was determined that she had COVID. And this is she's one of the first cases, and it happened here. It was one of the first cases of the clotting being noticed as a major in the autopsy. I don't want to get too into the details here, but there have been autopsies that have been performed in the aftermath of this that where the people, the pathologists see clots in all the people who have that clotting reaction have it in all their major organs.
That's correct. That's correct. Fortunately, it's not in every single patient who gets it. It's in a minority, but it's significant enough that I think if somebody is, especially in an intensive care unit setting, there's an emphasis on using anticoagulants and trying to prevent that.
Right. So when you're seeing strokes coming into Northwestern, you're seeing those kinds of events, you're looking at, especially in younger patients, because there has been an increase in New York in younger patients having strokes unexplained. Are you seeing that as well? And do you think that's related to COVID-19, or we still don't know?
It's interesting because we all expected after the information from Mount Sinai in New York to really see a big uptick in unusual cases in younger patients. We really didn't see that as much. This could be multifactorial. We had a conversation with some colleagues in Boston who also had the same experience where we didn't see as many. There's two things that happened with COVID-19. We actually saw a decrease in the number of patients who were calling 911 or coming to the hospital with stroke, and I think that was partly a reflection of the fear about the disease and the fear of maybe catching the disease in a hospital setting, which I don't think has been borne out. So we actually saw an overall dip in the numbers, and we were fortunate, I would say, that we did not see a big discrepancy. We were expecting to see higher numbers of strokes and younger patients, and we didn't really run into that the way it was originally described in New York. We have seen a few cases of more unusual presentations with clots in larger arteries, like in the neck, but fortunately, we didn't really run into a big deluge of young patients having
stroke. And were those related to COVID-19 or just...
Yeah, there was a handful of cases. There were patients who were COVID positive who had clots forming in some of the larger arteries, which was somewhat unusual, but the outcome, fortunately, was good in those handful of patients that we had.
Yeah. It's tricky because it's novel, right? I mean, we just don't know.
Exactly.
Are you surprised, Dr. Shabani, of how quickly we are able to get our arms around this? So far, I mean, we're certainly not there yet.
It's interesting because I think many times we figure out how to treat symptoms and effects without necessarily knowing all the science behind it. You know, this is a disease, as you mentioned, that's quite new, and we're learning every day, and we're learning from each other. You know, so in the beginning, for example, we were in our anesthesia team was in contact with the anesthesiologist in Italy, trying to get, you know, from their experience what the best way of doing things were in this new milieu. But, yeah, certain treatments, certainly work, even though we don't know, let's say, how does the virus cause that reaction. So, for example, if we now understand that there's a clotting issue, we know we can use anticoagulants. We may not understand exactly why it causes that reaction of clotting, but at least we can mitigate it.
Mm-hmm. You can catch up with it, as it were. Right. Yeah. And communication here, you point to something that's, I think, incredibly important as well, that we now have an ability to communicate globally, instantly, digitally, even, you know, by seeing things. You can bring people in to on a video screen that you need to talk to, or you need to see something, you need to see a procedure, whatever it is, instantaneously. And that has changed everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's going to change actually medicine significantly. I mean, I think there was going to be a transition to more telemedicine anyway, but I think the COVID-19 really pushed us in that direction in order to be able to, you know, see patients without having to drive all the way in downtown or to the hospital for those conditions that you don't actually have to be face-to-face. Right. And I think that's going to move the needle forward in that direction in a good way for everybody.
Right. That may be the greatest thing that's happened thus far in these couple of months is the ability. And there did need to be a national overlay. There need to be changes of the rules in order to do that. You would think, well, that would have been easy to do, but there were all kinds of legal ramifications to it, not just medical ramifications to it. And luckily, those got pushed out of the way. Sometimes you do need crises to move quickly into situations. All right, doctor, hold on one second. Right. We're going to come right back. Dr. Ali Shabani is with us, who is from Northwestern Medicine, and we are talking to doctors from Northwestern throughout the day here. He's the chief of neurointerventional radiology at Northwestern. We'll come right back. But if you have questions about strokes, about clot health, all those kinds of things that that pertain to strokes, maybe you have somebody in your family, you've got some concerns, 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. Lauren Lapka's got the traffic and the weather. Throughout the day on WGN today, or during this show, 3 to 7, the Rokan Show, we are talking with physicians from Northwestern Medicine about COVID-19 and your health. And Dr. Ali Shabani is with us. He's chief of neurointerventional radiology at Northwestern. A lot of big words here, doctor, that I got to get used to today. So you'll have to pardon me if I trip over a couple of them. In terms of strokes, which you're looking for in your practice.
Yes.
The fear of having a stroke is something that I think from a very young age, you know, you hear about your grandparents had them or your parents or whatever it is. And it's because it's sudden onset and, you know, somebody can just drop dead immediately or be paralyzed or all that. It's a very, very scary prospect. And with nothing that kind of no chest pain or whatever that leads to it. What are what do we know now are some of the precursors that can make people feel better about it? Obviously, there's genetics involved here, and people would have a genetic predisposition to them.
Yeah, so most stroke actually is what's called ischemic, and that's due to a clot forming somewhere, usually upstream, whether it's in the neck artery in the heart, and then being pumped by the heart to the brain. Humans have big brains. It takes a lot of blood flow. And that blocks a branch that's providing supply to a part of the brain, and then that's where the that part of the brain can get damaged, and that's where the symptoms come from. But the good news for stroke is in the last, I would say, 10 years for sure, the treatment has just become completely revolutionized. I mean, we are being able to treat strokes, whereas when I was in training many, many years ago in medical school or residency, there was no treatment for stroke. We sort of really didn't do much about it. We tried to study it. But in the last 10 to 15 years, it's just been absolutely revolutionary, and the effect of the treatment is so powerful that it's one of the most powerful treatments in all of medicine. So the challenge here is for folks to recognize the symptoms and not be afraid of coming in or not ignoring them, and being able to come in a timely fashion. We can treat stroke up to 24 hours, but generally the sooner we treat it, the more likely it is that we save enough brain cells where the function returns.
What is the revolutionary movement here? What's changed?
You know, it started back over 15 years ago with using a clot dissolving drug through the IV, and that was the NINDS trial. And the idea here was that, well, we know most of these arteries getting blocked by clot, and if we use a clot dissolving agent, that's probably going to help. And it did help, but there was a lot of limitations to it, and the it was only up to 3 hours after the incidents. That eventually went up to 4.5 hours. But I would say the biggest revolution was in the biggest strokes, which means the largest vessels that are being blocked. Those tended not to respond very well to intravenous clot-dissolving drugs. But what we do is to actually go from either the arm artery, the leg artery, sort of like a heart attack, how the heart attack is treated, to go up under X-ray guidance, go to the blocked artery, and actually open the artery directly by either suctioning it or pulling out that clot. And that has really revolutionized things, and we are able to return people to functional independence much, much more frequently than we used to be able to.
Wow. And there's also a lot of new science in that too. The ability to recover, and thankfully, you know, Northwestern right there on the campus of Northwestern Medicine downtown, you've got the Ability Lab, which is the preeminent rehab institute for people who have, whether they've had car accidents or strokes or anything like that, they're able to actually be treated in a different way. There's a lot of new science and a lot of good stuff happening there too.
Absolutely. And rehab makes a huge difference. And the reason is your brain and your body can improve for up to a year after the stroke, but that recovery is made so much better if you participate in physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. That really makes a massive difference.
When you mentioned something that's interesting, almost all the doctors we've had on today have talked about what a difference the last decade has made in medicine. And we alluded to it earlier with the digital stuff that goes on here and the ability to communicate. And we're going faster through from the research to actual medicines and to procedures. Did you ever anticipate when you were starting this that we'd be where we are now?
Not really, because I think we are on the cusp of some really interesting things. I mean, we were hoping for it. You know, when I was a much younger man, we were looking at immunology and genetics and actually genetic treatment. And, you know, I happened to participate, for example, in delivering some of the new medications for spinal muscular atrophy, which now is one of the diseases that's going to be essentially treatable with a single injection of gene therapy. So we were hoping for it. I'm just happy that it happened while I'm still working.
And that would be for people who have had short-term paralysis or complete paralysis?
This is like a type of muscular dystrophy, for example.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Oh, interesting. And in terms of paralysis, I know this is a little off your practice area, but that's one of those conditions that we've really been spent a lot of time in medicine trying to figure out. And there are big advancements in that as well, aren't there?
Yeah, there are, and especially I think on the therapy side. I would say the biggest advance overall with paralysis, at least in the setting of stroke, is the ability to try and save those cells. Because what happens in a stroke is not every cell is dead, basically, as a result of the loss of the blood flow. Some of these cells are just starved. They're not working. They're not doing their job. But if you restore the blood flow, they can do their job. When you restore the blood flow, sometimes you have the so-called Lazarus effect, where the patient immediately or very quickly recovers. But sometimes you need a few weeks, you know, to really see those cells coming back to life and starting to do their job. And the brain does have some plasticity. Certainly the younger you are, the more plasticity the brain has. But even in older folks, there is still some plasticity that can happen that mm-hmm. helps other parts of the brain take over function.
Right. Compensation. Right.
Exactly.
One part of the brain decides, all right, well, I'll pick this up for you.
Yeah.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, the human body, as much as we know, there's so much we don't know. And that's it's daunting, but it's also inspiring, I would imagine.
Yes. I mean, I would say that, what we don't know is certainly very, very big. And I think the more we know, the more we realize, the more we don't know. But it is something to look forward to, is to, try and learn more.
Yeah. Doctor, thank you very much for what you do. Dr. Ali Shaibani from Northwestern, Chief of Neurointerventional Radiology at Northwestern. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. All right. Have a good day.
You too. On the other side, Terry Savage is going to join us. We're going to take care of your wallet and your heart in the 6 o'clock hour. We've got Terry to help us find our money wherever it happens to be. She's become an absolute favorite here. If you've got questions for Terry, you can line up now, 312-981-7200, or queries about where your money is. If you've been trying to fight the state here to find your COVID money, trying to fight the federal government to try to find your COVID check. Is there another check coming? What are we going to get? Actually, Terry's got some interesting information coming up in just a few minutes, because it does appear that there is going to be another stimulus check, but it's going to be far less available than the first stimulus check. And some of it's good, right? Because we don't want to necessarily send stimulus checks to dead people. There's an advantage here. Hopefully that's not going to continue to happen. But there are other rules and ramifications to the stimulus checks that are going to be coming out. So stay tuned. She'll be able to tell you about that. And then Dr. Clyde Yancey, Chief of Cardiology at the Feinberg School of Medicine, Associate Director of Bloom Cardiovascular at Northwestern, is going to join us. He's one of the preeminent cardiologists on the planet Earth. And if you've got questions for him, we will talk to him about that. And some of it is COVID-related. Doesn't have to be necessarily. So all of that is available to you at 312-981-7200 by phone or by text. In the meantime, we've got news for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes.